It's time now for Living Theology, a weekly program in which Dr. John B. McDonald seeks to equip and encourage you to become more like Jesus Christ, living with competence and joy. With today's episode, here's Dr. McDonald.
How do you understand prayer? Understanding can make all the difference. Here's an illustration. A lumberjack bought a new kind of saw, the chainsaw. The saw was guaranteed to cut dozens of logs a day. Wearing himself out, he could only manage to cut one log a day. Returning to the store where he bought the saw, the lumberjack complained. The store owner pulled the cord, and the chainsaw roared to life. The surprised lumberjack said, "What's that noise?" You see, understanding made all the difference. So again, how do you understand prayer? Your answer will either limit or free you, impoverish or enrich you. Let's look at a few limiting understandings of prayer before I propose one that frees and enriches. There is some truth, perhaps lots of truth, in the following descriptions, but I suggest that each of them limits us in prayer. First is the definition of prayer as talking to God. This was a way of describing prayer that was common in my early Christian years. Its weakness, of course, is that it views prayer as a one-way communication. I speak, God listens. And this concept will limit your understanding of prayer. Two, one of my theology professors was fond of Simone Weil, W-E-I-L, who stated that absolutely unmixed attention is prayer. Although I agree praying usually has an intentional focus, absolute unmixed attention can be describing lots of activities. For instance, if you watch a person riveted to a computer game or texting on an iPhone, you'll have an illustration of absolutely unmixed attention. Prayer is more than unmixed attention. With respect, this definition of prayer is also deficient. Third, James Montgomery, who lived 1771 to 1854, wrote the lyrics to a hymn that's quite common. He wrote at least 8 stanzas, and the first is this: "Prayer is the soul's sincere desire, uttered or unexpressed, the motion of a hidden fire that trembles in the breast." Now, does the absence of this desire and the feelings that accompany it mean you're not praying? What about other emotions such as disappointment and anger? Do they disqualify your prayer also? These lyrics sound good and may resonate with our emotions, but again, understanding prayer in this way is limiting. Fourth, a thorough orthodox definition is offered by the Westminster Shorter Catechism, 1647. Question 98 is this: what is prayer? The answer? Prayer is an offering up of our desires unto God for things agreeable to His will in the name of Christ, with confession of our sins and thankful acknowledgement of His mercies. This definition is accompanied by numerous verse citations, proofs for each component of the definition. There is a certain cool, clinical detachment in the Catechism's presentation of the facts about prayer. I can't disagree with the facts, but if that's all prayer is, it's lacking something. How do you understand prayer? And does your understanding make a difference? Most of us need to shift our understanding of prayer to something that is clearly biblical and more effective. So, what is an understanding of prayer that makes a difference? Well, for me, the most helpful description of prayer was penned by a man who lived between 150 and 215 AD, Clement of Alexandria. And here's how he defined prayer: keeping company with God. 4 simple words: keeping company with God. Understanding prayer in this way made a significant difference for me. I no longer saw prayer as a medium for communication like a text message. Prayer became relational, and this fresh understanding shifted my focus from prayer as a medium toward God to praying as a relationship with God. This fresh understanding made all the difference for me. Here are 4 benefits I found that flowed from this relational understanding of prayer. First, Praying becomes a conversation. We do not develop much of a relationship with anybody if we do all the talking. Conversation goes both ways. Keeping company with God encourages us in listening to God and speaking with God. It also allows for times of companionable silence. Here are two previous back-to-back podcasts built around Jesus' visit to the home of Martha and Mary. We find this incident in Luke chapter 10, verses 38 to 42. You might find it helpful to listen to them again. They're entitled Four Qualities of Active Listening and Listening Well to God. And you can find them on the Archives for Living Theology on this website. So the first benefit is that praying makes it relational. It incorporates conversation with God. Second, praying becomes a way of life. We do not develop an intimate relationship with people without spending significant amounts of quality time with them. If prayer is keeping company with God, that means spending time with Him. This benefit is explored further in the previous podcast, Time for God. Again, this can be found on the Archives for Living Theology on this website. This benefit also helps us make sense of some biblical texts on prayer that we don't understand or we simply ignore. For example, 1 Thessalonians 5, verse 17 bluntly says, "Pray without ceasing." That's the New American Standard Bible. Looking for an alternative reading in a different translation won't help you avoid the obvious. New International Version says, "Pray continually." New Living Translation, "Never stop praying." If your understanding of prayer is talking to God, well, that means you're continually talking to Him. Most descriptions of prayer can't deal with this verse unless it means that you're on your knees somewhere in a closet 24/7. However, if your understanding of prayer is that it is keeping company with God, even in the times of companionable silence, it is entirely possible, even desirable, that you can never stop praying. Praying that is relational invites us to spend more time with God in all the activities of life. Third, the praying becomes more honest. Prayer has a medium can tend towards formality, as if you're speaking to a judge or putting a request to a government official. If prayer is keeping company with God, over time we become more transparent and honest. For instance, emotions of disappointment and anger are expressed as if we were in the presence of our best friend. Consider the emotions expressed in Psalm 42, verses 9 to 10. The psalmist writes, "I say to God, my rock, why have you forgotten me? Why must I go about mourning, oppressed by the enemy? My bones suffer mortal agony, as my foes taunt me, saying to me all day long, where's your God?" Now, the writer of that psalm was hurting. He was down. And yet he could honestly and transparently express this dejection, pain, this complaint to his God. He was keeping company with his God. Praying that is relational erodes, gradually wears away the barriers to openness and honesty with our God. And here's the fourth benefit I found. Praying becomes transformational. As we keep company with God, we become more aware of God's heart, His purposes and desires, His intentions and His ways. It is no longer about me, it is about us. More importantly, it's about Him. Our growing awareness of God's heart becomes fertile ground for change in our own hearts, attitudes, biases, and self-centeredness. Praying that is relational involves our transformation. So reflect upon Clement of Alexandria's ancient description of prayer as keeping company with God, and see how it begins to open up your prayer life as a relationship rather than a simple activity or a duty. Let it become more conversational, two ways, more enduring, more open and honest, and of course, more transformational. Hopefully, this fresh understanding of prayer will make a difference for you.
You've been listening to John B. MacDonald in Living Theology, a program designed to equip and encourage you to become more like Jesus Christ. Dr. MacDonald has an extensive online writing ministry. To learn more about John and his work, follow the links on the producer's page at hopestreamradio.com.